This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
How does the world really work? Well, we lost some knowledge of that a very long time ago. And there is an author, Richard Heath, who understands what we lost probably better, I think, than anyone whose work I've read on the subject of sacred number. Richard is a systems designer who studies the technical achievements of the ancient world, from those of the megalithic astronomers to sacred building design. He's been on Dreamland before, quite a while ago, I believe in 2016. He is the author of 5 books, including Sacred Number in the Origins of Civilization, The Harmonic Origins of the World, and most recently, what I would call a masterpiece, Sacred Geometry, Language of the Angels. Richard, welcome to Dreamland. I am so excited to have you with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Whitley.
Well, it's good. It is going to be a wonderful show. Now, I've been thinking about getting into sacred number. How do we do this? And for our listeners who may not know much about what it is or was, or why it was so important, because as I read your books, I see there's a steady decline in knowledge. Can you tell us what sacred number was and how they thought of it at the very beginning when it was a powerful part of the human mind, of human thought?
Yes, well, that's the first section of numbers. We were not probably sacred at first, but there was a group of people in the megalithic period, late Stone Age, who because they weren't literate in the modern way, I mean, they weren't numerate, they couldn't deal with their numbers very easily, they were apparently fascinated with knowing the truth about the things that were in the sky. And so they made a set of different things work together, which was completely different to today's astronomy. They looked at things happening on the horizon, and they were able to count between the same thing happening on the horizon, so that by counting, they had like 365 days in a year, or 354 days in a lunar year, or, you know, all the different time periods that they could see. They were able to turn them into numbers, but they weren't numbers like we have today. It was impressive because they discovered that many of these different time cycles interact with each other to form these beautiful ratios that are very simple. And some of these ratios are as simple as the musical ratios that you play on your piano, which you can see are numerical in the world of Pythagoras later in the Greek times. And they also were able to make geometries. And when they get the geometries, they found out that they could compare the cycles and see them as ratios between all of the cycles. And this is a bit like our calendar today, only we only have, at the moment, a sort of solar calendar. Many people in the past, many groups, thousands of years ago, they lived according to the lunar calendar. And so numbers come up. So one of them is like in 59 days, you have 2 cycles of the moon. And already the numbers are becoming useful, especially if you're living in a Stone Age environment. But they soon got into very interesting areas, such as we're about to enter a period when the moon goes above the sun. So in the sun obviously goes between summer and winter, between the north and the south extreme. But the moon goes even further over 9 years, and they got all these things worked out, and then we find that everybody uses this 6,800-day cycle to align things that are important to people dying. There was started the beginning of some religious ideas, such as, well, what's going to happen to me when I die or my relative does? So many of these traditions started to accumulate what we would call sacred meaning. So sacred number, I started calling books sacred number because it seemed more about numbers and geometry at first. But my latest book, I have mapped out that there was a period when these megalithic people who built these large-scale monuments and derived all this astronomical data, they shifted, that information shifted down towards the ancient Near East and the Eastern Mediterranean. So that was quite a lot of words already. But somewhere around about then, it became sacred for Egypt and sacred for Babylonia and the Sumerians. And a very cohesive set of traditions grew up in which numbers were an esoteric knowledge that people had. And so they must have thought that the sky was some sort of spiritual connection to something higher.
I think that they were trying to duplicate on Earth, or mirror, I should say, on Earth, the sky, because things in the sky seem to move with absolute perfection, while things on Earth were quite chaotic. And that's,
yes.
How do you respond to that thought?
Well, the interesting thing, look, if we put our modern knowledge hat on, the fact is that the solar system and its moons and the sun are part of a perpetual motion machine, which doesn't really run down. It may get slightly adjusted from time to time, but effectively, it belongs to something that's eternal, and those ratios are eternal. And so our ideas about eternity being something like in heaven is, in a sense, literally true. But they were looking at all of this from the point of view of living on Earth. They had no choice about that. So, and indeed, we do largely look at it from Earth. So, and it turns out that the really significant numbers come out of looking at the planets from the Earth, as if the Earth is a secondary creation. It's not just a planet. It's being created rather like a jewel in the middle of a setting. This is why the title of my last book comes to have Language of the Angels, because it would appear that some intelligence has been used to make the Earth a special place. And we know that it's a special place from the diversity or even the existence of life. And many of these cosmic bodies have responsibilities for making it so. And we find also with the giant planets that they have musical ratios to the lunar year. And they're very exact. And they appear to have synchronized with our own emergence in our present form, like Homo sapiens sapiens. It seems like we're living inside our own coincidence that we should live and develop and become aware even before the ancient Near East civilizations. And this explains a lot of our history and a lot of our religious thought, in my opinion anyway. I find more and more that connects the two together.
Yes, and you have an an interesting section in the book, speaking of this connection, about G.I. Gurdjieff and his P.D. Uspensky and Mr. Bennett. Gurdjieff posed a question for himself. What is, in general, the sense and meaning of man's existence? And I thought that your response was fascinating. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, the whole second part of the book is brought to a conclusion, really, because I project an idea of John Bennett that there is such a thing as the cosmic individuality that lives at the level of the sun, and this is man's destiny, the human race destiny, to become a creative source within our planet. By creative, this means that we're in a developmental process, and we haven't learned to do this very much. But, for instance, I think it's very influential, the figure of Jesus is very influential as expressing what cosmic individuality might be like, and also that if we start to see that all of the things have been done for us to a certain degree, then we start to have a change in our relationship to the earth, which is particularly an important point today, that our relationship to the earth has to be stop being completely exploitative, and there seems to be some side to us that needs to be reawoken to appreciate these sorts of facts that the numbers allowed me, a poor ordinary person really, able to find a lot of interesting correlations that we can all use. So in our lives, numbers seem geeky to a degree, but when we can develop some appreciation now of the natural cycles and see how they are all to do with living on the earth and not particularly to do with the sun and the solar system, it's a special, we live in a special place, and I'm really just trying to get out some notion of this that can't be put down by either scientific logic or put down by religious authority, because it enfranchises you and me or everybody, whereas it's not about having a system of thought anymore. It's about going back to have a look and to know more. We have to know more about the moon and live more in balance with nature and with all of what's being set up here.
Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break for you. I hope you enjoy these commercials, and most of you never subscribe. That's okay. It's hard times right now. But if you can, please do. Obviously, we need you more than ever. You know, we live right now in a time of great upheaval and personal loneliness and also dread. The dread comes from the fact that we've been taught that we are only material bodies, and therefore we're terrified of death as never before. But it's not true. And in my book, Jesus, A New Vision, I look at this in a completely new way, not through the lens of Christianity and not through the lens of secularism either. By exploring the life of Jesus and his teachings in this new way, Jesus, A New Vision sheds fresh light on the meaning and power of his life, his parables. It explores the mysteries of the Gospels of Thomas and Mary with fresh insight, and it explains why he did what he did, which was to commit suicide by crucifixion. Then it goes into what the Shroud of Turin really is. It is not a medieval forgery. something extraordinary happened in that tomb. To find out, read Jesus A New Vision. It is truly a first. It's available on Amazon right now, and it will be available as an audio book by February the 15th.
There was an incredible UFO wave going on back in 2007. Forgotten all about it? Well, we haven't on unknowncountry.com, and you can still explore it with one of the leading experts who was involved personally, Brian Vike. Listen to this.
My good friend of mine, he's in the UK, believe it or not, and of course I'm in Canada, and between the two of us, just two of us, we pulled in. Now this is going to be a rough one. I think I stopped it at 434 reported sightings for Canada alone in 2007.
This is an excerpt from one of literally more than 1,000 different episodes of our various podcasts on unknowncountry.com. But how do you access them? We have a powerful search engine that enables you to access them by subject. But now also, when you go to the podcast drop-down menu, you will see at the bottom, Podcast Archive. This takes you to lists of all of our podcasts organized by year. And you can click on any year and browse through everything that's in that year for that podcast. This is a huge website, and we work more every day to make it accessible. For example, subscribers can now listen to the subscriber version of Dreamland on an app. There are a number of apps out there that will accommodate this, and subscribers will find more information about it in the subscriber section of unknowncountry.com on the Dreamland page. So for this and so much more, the time to subscribe to unknowncountry.com is right now. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe to this website. We need you. And I can assure you, you need us. We're back. We're talking to Richard Heath. His book, Sacred Geometry, Language of the Angels, truly magnificent journey filled with marvelous color illustrations and a deep, deep dive into sacred number. His website is sacred.numberscience.org, and it's a fascinating site. Richard, I think, you know, we usually just announce the site, but this site is special. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, I use it myself to build some ideas and also to provide things that may not be available to people. So I've tried putting a few lessons on, but you know, the trouble is that one thing takes over from another. So it may be, but it's an enormous amount of information. It's either categorized as a normal website might be, with departments and sub departments, but it also is a blog feel to it. And it has a very good search facility. And a tag cloud. So if you've got any interests, you can start tuning into things. I do notice that very few people that come to the site use any of those features and then promptly leave, of course, because they don't really know what's on the site. So I think as things continue, I'm hoping that more people will take advantage of it. I've put a lot of energy into the website as well. I've lost a number of websites, which have been very unpleasant. But I think this one seems to be pretty safe and it's getting there. So
when you say lost them, what do you mean?
Well, that one of the music events was when the automatic backup system called RAID had a problem with itself and everybody's websites were lost. And then mine hadn't been backed up enough, so all I had was some sort of printouts and downloads and things.
You need to back up. Our website is backed up 4 times a day on one server and once a day on a completely different, unrelated server in different parts of the world.
Mine was as well, but I think that they just let all the hard drives in the machines, that they created a double error, something like that.
A double error, eh? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's go on and talk about a little bit about the we're getting ready to get into, which is why this is so important and what it means in relationship, our relationship to the world around us. And I want to kind of work into that.
Yeah.
The first thing we need to think about, I believe, is the way this planet is organized and its solar system and its star. Its star is a yellow dwarf, but it's a very stable yellow dwarf. Most of them blow out huge solar flares every few thousand years. Their planets are stripped.
It's not a dwarf, actually. It's a main sequence star.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Makes it very, very reliable, actually.
You're the expert, and I'm.
It used to be my first love astronomy for stars.
So it's a very reliable star.
It is. And, of course, we don't know what's happening too much inside it, but we probably know more than ever. What is important for us is really that out of that star, that star is probably the guiding intelligence of the creation of the solar system. And then the planets probably have a kind of intelligence between them, which we might call angelic intelligence. Some people talk of the angelic host, for instance, seems to be an acceptable term. And this means that the numbers are a way of manifestation for higher intelligence. And it turns out that because all these things are so reliable, these planets going around at all the same time, the numbers crop up because, like Jupiter, it comes close to us, forms a loop in the sky, and then it goes away. And then that takes 399 days for the loop to arrive again. And Saturn's a similar situation, and so is the same with Uranus. So these gas giants or giant planets, they are only touching the moon or touching us in a sort of a very, very numerical way. And they call this discrete mathematics these days. And because of this, they've developed a musical harmony between each other and the moon. And this may have a function towards what is possible on the Earth. Maybe it makes things easy in some way. I mean, we've recently noticed with this virus that how benign nature normally is.
Right, and yet it does have a tendency to bite us at times, and that's also true of the sun. The sun is normally very benign, but there have been times in the past, such as what happened apparently 12,000 years ago, where there was some kind of an upheaval in the solar system. But let's talk about the solar system for a minute. This thing is so remarkable. We have our stable star. We have the gas giants in the outer areas of the solar system sweeping away most asteroids and dangerous objects that come in. Then we have the moon, which is in exactly the right place to sweep away more of them. And the oddest thing is, when there's a lunar eclipse, why is it that the moon is this designed? Did somebody design this?
Well, if you took it as a staircase, you'd say that looks like evidence of design. And then as you discover more and more about things, especially to do with the moon, you see that the tilt of the Earth is absolutely necessary in order to obtain all these different habitats and to create the kind of weather patterns and all the currents in the sea and so on. And this is due to the impact of an early planetoid in the early solar system. It hit the Earth in just such a way that a small amount of material was shared on the Earth, but a lot of the other material went off into the sky and formed the moon. And initially it went around very, very quickly, quite close to the Earth, and it created enormous tides in the actual solid or molten surface, which may even have helped create our tectonic plates, which now Mars, in contrast, doesn't have any tectonic plates left. It may have had them in its early history, and it hasn't got a large moon. And to come back to Gurdjieff, I mean, he made a series of very important kind of predictions from our point of view, because this collision theory was very minimalized for a long time. It's only recently become current. And in his book, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, he suggests that only that we are beings called of a different sort to where there is no big moon. And it always creates these special three-brained beings, he said, on these planets. So they have moving centers, emotional centers, and thinking centers. And once you get this triad operating, the new things are possible to the beings on that planet, including they can create souls.
Well, exactly. Right. They can think. They can move their attention, which two-brained beings, which the animals are for the most part, with some with a vestigial third brain, like apes and dogs and cats. And most predators actually do have a sort of vestigial third brain, what we would call intellectual cortex. But they can't move their attentions. They don't have choice. They simply do what they must. In other words, they have no moral order. They, since they have no choices, they are in effect always in heaven.
But they can't describe the world.
No.
They are limited in their present moment. And this is, of course, the characteristic that we're well familiar with. We created enormous present moments of various sorts. For instance, the Bible itself is an enormous present moment for people who study it.
You're talking to one of them, so I know. I agree with you.
I thought you might. And then you've got present moments to do with who we think we are in different countries and all these things. And yet they seem relatively chaotic. But they are blessed, our present moments, and we need to sort of like turn and see what it is that who we are. And then, of course, Gurdjieff proposed self-development to people as a necessity. So, in other words, the planet was set up to develop intelligent life.
In the past, somebody understood this, I think that, for example, I was just going through it for my book, Jesus in New Vision, and I see that the Bible, the Old Testament, which was written probably mostly, or if not all, during the age of Aries, that would be. Figure Aries is mentioned more in the Old Testament than any other animal, 60 or 70 times or something like that. And then the age changes, the procession moves to Pisces, and who appears? The fisher of men.
Who was born to a virgin.
Born. And when I was writing my book about Jesus, I got into the depth of this, and I realized there is an intelligence here. There is someone here, a great intelligence. And I would never be able to believe that this is not something that's designed. And, when Jesus said, if you don't awaken, I will come as a thief. When I return, I'll come as a thief in the night. I think that's, we didn't awaken, did we?
Well, this reminds me also of the spirit. You never know when it cometh. It is a difficult thing to open oneself to what's really written in a book like that and to understand it. But I've felt that the idea that Jesus expressed according to the book obviously was of a brand new, and you must remember that the Bible story has the most peculiar story of Abraham being asked by God to sacrifice his own son, and then this comes out in the life of Jesus as his death on the cross, and then he gets referred to as Agni Dei. Is that right? Something, yeah, the death of God through, and also it's the end of animal sacrifice, because animal sacrifice, you know, is a different sort of thing. So
yes.
Now you've got a human vision of a sacrifice, as if there's some continuity in the Bible, and this was even extended in the third Abrahamic religion. In a strange way, but it's because there's something about the harmony that arises out of Adam, because he has a number 45 in the letters of his name, 1, 4 and 40. So you add them together. Well, if you keep on multiplying these numbers by 2, which is like the octave, then, Sarah gives birth at 90, which and Isaac's born, and he's called Isaac, I believe, because she laughed or something. I don't know that and he doesn't die according to the Bible, and it's obviously being manipulated, this information, in order to cap the story. And in this case, 180 is twice. Now that's when he dies. So he lives for 180 years, and he's born to a mother who's 90. And then we get the onset in music as you double these numbers, the onset of chromatism, which is the 12 tribes of Israel.
And 12 is huge in the Bible.
It's huge, absolutely.
The 12 apostles, the 12 tribes of Israel. There's so many 12s, and not only in the Bible, but also elsewhere in Pythagorean theories, and why is the number 12 so important?
Well, if you take Jupiter, for instance, Jupiter sweeps through one sign of the zodiac every 361 days, which happens to be 19 squared. Now, 19 is considered to be the seal of the Creator, or of Jehovah, or of Allah as well. And the in Islam, it's very important. So there are these number clues in all of our literature, and it's not playing a game, because the literature is bringing people to God, but it's also storing information from, in some of these cases, as before, when people talked stories. They could only speak stories and remember them. And so these, in the case of Jupiter, if he's Zeus, he belongs to the northern tribes, because there's no letter Z in Greece. When is he swept in? Well, there must be now, but in the matriarchal Greeks. So when they obviously used then the symbol, which has often been taken to be the sun. But Jupiter is the second biggest object in the solar system, and it's 1/6 of what a star would require to become a star. So 12 is a big number, and you see it particularly in India as well, because they are the only people who saved this period, 361 days, as being very important, and they run a lot of their calendars from it.
Right.
From which, that's right. I deduce something that they may have had parts of the overall picture that was also shared with the people who wrote the Bible.
which we'll, in a moment, we're going to get to that, to the connection, the deep connections in the human mind and in human life that are underneath the way we see reality now, but that were once on the surface when maybe we understood a little bit more clearly who we were, even though we understood a lot less clearly what the world was. We'll be right back.
The new unknown country is here, and it has so much to offer. Our huge archive of Dreamland, plus the full run of William Henry's Revelations, Anne Streber's Mysterious Powers and her incredible contactee interviews, Whitley's Communion, Secret School, Transformation, and Majestic ebooks, his powerful meditations, and so much more. Plus, every week, the full subscriber versions of Whitley's Dreamland, Mike Clellan's The Unseen, and monthly, Jeremy Vaney's The Experience. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account. Plus, a live chat every week on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, and so much more. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and subscribe. Keep this incredible site going and have a great time doing it.
Unknowncountry.com subscribers have access to a vast treasury of information. Listen to what Dr. Robert Schock said. He's an expert on the past, and for that reason, he also knows a great deal about the future.
We are re-entering, as you say, a debris field. And when you have a debris field like this, it enters the solar system. It energizes the solar system as you have things going into the sun. Even clouds of dust particles, for instance, it will energize the sun. It will destabilize the sun. This is what we saw at the end of the last ice age in approximate terms, about 13,000 years ago.
You know, I'm updating this right now. This is the 19th of September, 2019, because this is happening. These asteroids and meteors are passing Earth close passbys all the time now. I'd say it's inevitable that this is going to happen. Robert Schock is right. We're going to get him back on Dreamland soon. And, you know, you will not find anyone else anywhere on the internet, any other podcast, doing this kind of research in this way with experts like Robert Schock. So subscribe today. Guess what? That's what you ought to do. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab. Do it now.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're talking to Richard Heath, his new book, Sacred Geometry, Language of the Angels. We're also touching on material in his book, The Harmonic Origins of the World. Richard was last with us on Dreamland in 2016, and his website is sacred.numberscience.org, and it is very well worth exploring. As Richard said earlier, people go to it, but they don't explore it very deeply. There's a lot there. Now, we were talking about the relationship sort of in a big way between the Bible and number and the sacredness of number. We talked about the number 12, and when we did, I thought to myself it would be valuable to go back a little bit, and you talked about the significance of number in the name Adam. Can you explain a little bit what gematria is and why there are numbers that are related to these certain words?
Well, the proto and protagonist of the Bible is introduced in the second chapter as Adam. And so those letters have that meaning in tuning theory, that you can use numbers in a number of different ways. And the Greeks had, for their, all their gods, often the god's name gave you some enormous clue about the god themselves. And in the Parthenon, which show three different interpretations of the Parthenon in my new book, there's the same basis as there is in the Bible of the number 45 multiplied by 2 a number of times, producing the first you can get five scales of numbers by the time you get up to 720 down to 360. Well, the same thing's done inside all the columns inside of the nous of the Parthenon. And it functions like a musical instrument, if you could read it that way. And the basic number is, again, 45. And so Athena is also being tied in because it's her temple. I mean, I haven't made a great study of gematria, but I just use it when it's when it's relevant to what I'm actually doing. And my book Harmonic Origins was due to work with an American musicologist who lived in New York and then Washington, and he pioneered the understanding of what these numbers mean from a musical point of view. And it appears that almost all of our sacred literature has an eye to putting numbers in, so that once you learn about tuning theory and how different scales pop up when the numbers get bigger and how many threes are in a number, that changes things as well, creates different octaves. And he decoded Plato, and then with the help of another gentleman who was a Jesuit that he knew, who studied India thoroughly, they sort of collaborated on writing a book called The Myth of Invariance. Now, in the idea of sacred numbers, invariance is important because no matter what's happened to the actual information in terms of being lost, or whether, you know, a book has been destroyed, or whether a temple is no longer there, or all these things in which information might have been stored, the invariant is actually visible in the sky as the way the planets operate with all of their periodicities, but it's also available in the conceptual world, the world of eternity, where numbers come together to form music. And so when you take the first six numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you see that each number forms an interval that is the basis, and then a next, and the next basis for large scale harmony. So 1 to 2 gives you the octave, 2 to 3 gives you the fifth, 3 to 4 gives you the fourth, 4 to 5 is the major third, and 5 to 6 is the minor third. And then another important thing is you get 7, and 7 won't play with harmony. So it's the end of a fundamental creation story just in the first six numbers. And then these numbers percolate upwards, so that if you get 16 over 15, well, 16 is based on 2 because you multiply 2 a lot, you get 16. And then 15, well, that's 5 times 3. So, and that's a semitone. Now, that's that ratio, 16 over 15, it comes from these first six numbers, but then it's manifested in the synodic period between loops of Saturn relative to the lunar year. And so the number 12, which is 12 lunar months in a lunar year, is then resonating with this other number, which is 12.8 lunar months. And so all of the outer planets have, so they form integer relationships with the moon that we have. And this is only after it's, long after its creation. And as I said, the creation was miraculous enough, but then what we've got now is that they're all in perfect harmony, the outer planets with the moon. So the moon, if you like, has come out of the Earth due to a collision, and it slowly reached a position in which it's harmonized our world with the cosmos. And the significance of this is that once you do something of this sort, we don't know that, but that could be directly tapped into our mechanism of becoming more intelligent, or and so It's a very important thing to find, and it's completely invisible to modern astronomy. No one mentions it anywhere. And if you look at the inner planets, they seem to be organized according to the Fibonacci ratio. And these are other types of small integers. So they start in the ratio, you have 1 to 1 and 1 to 2 again, and then 2 to 3 by adding 2 to 1, and then you get 5 by adding 3 to 2, and then you get 8 by adding 5 to 3. And so it proceeds. And if you take 365 days as being the practical year, that's how many days we have if you don't count the fraction over, then that's divided by 5 gives you 73 days, and then divided by, multiplied by 8, sorry, we get Venus, which is as bright as Jupiter. And so these two major players, one's organized according to the golden mean because it's so close to the sun that it's sort of under control, you know, very much, you know, more. But the outer planets have been able to develop these harmonic relationships. And then we are sort of sandwiched in between in this highly sophisticated environment. And it has a form all of its own. But none of this has come to light, possibly because it was always kept secret. And so parts of it would come out through the Bible. Parts of it would come out in the Rig Vedas or later documents when they were eventually written down. And Homer's epics, they are littered with special numbers as well. And we have a whole set of stories that it makes it so much more interesting to read these books once you understand the pattern that we're living inside.
Yeah, and we have a situation where we're riders on some kind of a wave. And I wouldn't say that I necessarily understand that wave, and yet the word divinity makes a lot of sense when you look at it. Well, for example, there are light, conscious light seems to play an enormous role in guiding the mind of man. If you look at Akhenaten, he tried to alter Egyptian religion into sun worship. And then came Zoroaster, who encountered a being of light when he was wandering, looking, trying to find the truth, who talked about the one God. Then comes Moses, and he is instructed by a burning bush, in other words, also by light. And then comes Jesus, who is transfigured into a being of light, and after he is resurrected. And then comes Paul, who is affected by this being of light on his way to Damascus, where he was planning to persecute the Jesus followers there. And completely transformed by it, and he then transforms the world. So what is that? But before you answer, free Dreamlanders, we have to take a little break. We'll be right back.
A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. A new world. Unforgettable.
1968, Glynis Mackay is a desperate woman. She's been told she's dying of cancer. She can no longer speak. She receives a psychic communication from aliens that she has been in touch with for years. Listen to her talk about what happened.
I went into this huge room, and there were many other people sitting and some lying on couches that had come there for healing. And then he said to me, "You understand who sent you here to me?" And I'm thinking, what does he mean? And then he said, "You've been having communication for many, many years from who you call UFOs." And I thought, my God, how does he know this? And I'm trying to sort of push back on the chair, looking a bit shocked probably. And he said to me, "When you leave here at 12:10 today, there are two craft over the house and you will see them."
And she and her mother-in-law both saw a UFO hanging over
their house. Subsequently, Glynis's cancer disappeared, and she went on to become one of the world's most extraordinary mediums. UnknownCountry.com and Dreamland are among the very few places Glynis has interviewed. She became close friends with Ann Streber and with myself, and in our own personal lives revealed some extraordinary experiences. I had a contact with a dead friend so incredible with Glynis that it convinced me that there must be something more. There almost has to be. In fact, many things have taken me in that direction, but this was just shocking. In any case, you can hear all of this as a subscriber to UnknownCountry.com by going to our vast archive. It's so simple to search. Just look at the subject cloud on the left side after you enter the subscriber area, and you'll find so much there. Go to UnknownCountry.com right now and subscribe. It's an immensely valuable and deeply empowering archive, and the site needs your support. We're talking to Richard Heath. His new book, Sacred Geometry, The Language of the Angels. His website, sacred.numberscience.org. Do go to sacrednumberscience.org and take a look at what he has to offer there. Now, getting back to this business that we just, before we left, the air. Yeah, please.
I noticed that the Bible starts with light, yes. But it's sort of primordial light.
Yes.
And, there's all sorts of things get hit off. Did you mention the transfiguration of Jesus as well? That was quite an interesting example of light. And, of course, you get reports of fear, don't you, as well?
Yes.
People feel
fear. Well, I'm very interested in conscious light because I think there is – I think light, maybe all light, but certainly – some form of light is conscious. I think that is true. And I think that it is inevitable that we would find a relationship to that through an understanding of divine number, because it shows us patterns that we would not, cannot otherwise see.
Yeah. It's a, one of the reasons why I mentioned the cosmic individual in the book halfway through, I wanted to show the difference between a secondary creation, which obviously the Earth is a secondary creation,
right?
But it's whereas the Sun and the solar system is a primary creation. You know, it's more or less fixed once it has settled down, and that secondary creation, it's got a capacity to work in ways that the listeners might find interesting. I found recently that it really helps to imagine in, say, Psalms or something, if you're reading a book of what people would call devotional I-thou dualism with your creator, that if you consider that the dialogue's going on between your true self and your who you think you are, that this idea of development brings the meaning of some of these long, and people don't like it. They don't like people ogling the creator and everything. It goes on and on and on and on and on. But the reason why it was done was because this is how God, so to speak, is liable to actually be present for us, is in something that we're not conscious of yet, but something that has a long-term development.
Yes, we're not conscious of it yet, but I think we're going to become conscious of it because we are reaching the end of the age of Pisces, and Pisces is a little fish swimming in water. Everything the little fish needs is given to it by the water. That is to say, by the earth. We're in the womb of the earth. That's why it's water. But the water bearer pours the water out. Aquarius. And that is to say the womb of the earth, the waters of the earth burst. And out comes the little fish on dry land. Now what do we do? That's where we are right now.
I'll have breakfast.
Right. Well, we have to figure out a way to live. And it's been done, after all. There was a time when everything on earth lived in the water. But the waters became untenable for many creatures, and they began to crawl out onto the land. And well, here we are.
Although it looks quite interesting to us, it's quite a vicious environment. And it's quite claustrophobic often, you know, because it's overcrowded with fish.
Well, exactly.
So the amphibians, you know, they found it was much better to the extent that they waddled out originally and rapidly evolved ways of moving around out there. And one of the most important things about being on a planet like this is that you have actually solid things, enduring objects. I mean, even our memories are enduring. And so all of the enduringness makes it a very special environment in which a mind and also an intelligence can grow a mind. Because just being intelligent is interesting, but what is it about the mind is it really feels like the self. A lot of the people in India used to talk about, equate the mind and the self. We are moving into a different age now so many people working from home and then thinking, what are they going to do with all the stuff they've got and how are they going to change their lives in order to deal with all of this? And I've had this conversation today already, and I think we often see in adversity opportunities. I think the Protestants of the early church used to say that man's extremity is God's opportunity, or something like that. So that it's an opportunity for us to stop being passive towards all that we are, because we're forced to say, well, what are we and what are we doing?
And isn't it true that the mind and the body are both tools of something, of that silent presence that is us?
Well, we have such amazing faculties to such an extent. You could say that we couldn't really we couldn't have an emotion without having a body in a way. You know, everything is connected up, and that does make it seem complicated. But the role of trying to tease out these sort of things is to find, to understand, and understanding seems to be a blessing in itself, because having knowledge is one thing, but to understand, and I think that I have found that, you see, for me, I've made some sort of an understanding, which has enabled me to speak about it, and that satisfies me because I realize though that it's going to be hard to relate to these numbers and these things. I mean, if we talk about the monuments, for instance, all the monuments that I list in the book, which goes on for quite some time, they all have very simple models relating to them. And these models are really all belong to the geocentric world view that we no longer have today. And so there are a lot of things going on, as well as the changes of the ages. And during the age we've just been in, everybody discovered something, you know, like Pasteur. It's all about big names, and it's all about egos, and, you know, the people who do things, and they're the only important people to a certain degree. And I think we are now working into a different age, which I think Bennett described as being the synergic age, where we work together more. But we can't work together by having people tell us to do it. So we're looking towards relaxing our consumption of everything in the world, And to do that, we have to dumb up. We have to wise up, because we are seeing now that if things continue to go on as they are, the impressions that people receive are going to be ever worse. And if you get people who are, if they can't find a satisfying life for themselves, then who's to blame?
Well, look what's happening in the world. Of course they can't. I mean, the United States is filled with dissatisfied people who are going down all kinds of dead-end paths in a desperate attempt to find a life that they want to live.
So what's the point?
Just last week, in of all places, the Netherlands, Holland, one of the most civilized countries in the world, there were riots because people are so dissatisfied. Remarkable.
Yeah. And so that rioting sort of concept is not good for people either, because then they take on the collective and they can do anything. And then afterwards they have to suffer the consequences of doing it. So, you know, this is mass psychosis, as Gurdjieff described it, and it's been the cause of war for centuries and more. And so we've got to ask the question, we need some kind of different way of appreciating and loving our fellow man, to not want anyone to have to go through that kind of loss of self.
In the third half hour of the show, we're going to be going to in just a moment, we're going to be talking about the angelic mind and how our minds can become connected to this greater mind and through the medium of number but sacred number, not number as we think of it now, and how that worked in the past and what they did to build that relationship. I would like to thank all of our free Dreamlanders for being with us. The book we've been talking about is Sacred Geometry, The Language of the Angels. And as well, we have touched on the harmonic origins of the world, sacred number, and the source of creation. Our guest is Richard Heath, one of the great experts in this field. I would consider both books and all three of his books to be very important. Sacred Geometry is an exceptionally beautiful and powerful book. It is so clear and clearly written and magnificently illustrated. There's no other way to describe it. It is a real treasure. Now, what we're going to be doing is to relate ourselves to the sacredness of the world around us in the third half hour, because this has been lost. We don't do this anymore. We don't feel this. But if we're going to go on as a species through what is coming, and for example, right now we're losing 1.3 trillion tons of ice a year on planet Earth. This is going to change everything and make it much harder to maintain this huge human population that's on the planet. We're going to live this. Most of us are going to live this. What does that mean in terms of being part of a great divinity, which we certainly are? Free Dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us. Subscribers will keep straight on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.